first ever deal, but we end up closing a $100,000 fucking deal.
Little Fish is a townhouse development and project management company that helps everyday Australians and landowners grow their wealth with property by streamlining the developer's process. Co-founded by Peter Kelly and Ben Drowen, they have gone to dominate the property industry and make a massive wave with their podcast, Little Fish. I would like to introduce my friends, Benny and PK, to the Tiger Table. Guys, welcome.
Love it, man. Love it. And this is back where it all began. Yes. in this room, mate.
It's very nostalgic.
And for those that don't know, you guys were in here a year and a bit ago.
Yep.
In the table behind the cameras here, and we were workshopping your five glorious brands.
100%. And when I say where it all began, not where we all began, but... Yeah. Definitely our relationship, Dane, and I guess the journey of, playing in the big time a little bit. I felt like we're playing with the big boys, engaging the big boys and going full out on the brand and the Bible, Benny.
I think we had a conversation along those lines. If we want to be with the big boys, we need to do what the big boys do and invest in our brand, right? Like I'm passionate about branding, but we needed to invest in it, figure it out, and get our story cohesive. Yeah, so it was a big investment for us, Dane, in both time, as you know, like we worked with you guys, your amazing team, for over a year. But also there was a capital outlay as well, and we were a growing business, so it was a big decision for us. But we're just saying, as we're walking in, it's one of the best. I was saying to Marcus actually, it's one of the best decisions that we did make, and we had to have conversations where we're saying, are we doing this, man? Is this what we're doing? And it was really, and it's been a masterstroke. So thank you to you and your team.
You're welcome, man. And also, like, it was really exciting for us to be able to work with you guys, because first and foremost, congratulations on the podcast. You guys are 2 years in.
Yep.
2 years in. Yep. We're into season three now.
Yeah, on the Little Fish pod. And just for those that are listening, you guys have been drastically consistent with that over the 2 years. Was there periods where you had ebbs and flows, or were you just hitting single week?
We hit it every week since we started day dot. So, which has been insane, because we had no idea. We moved offices. We had, all the things that can go wrong went wrong. But we figured it out. And I think we're getting pretty good at it now, as far as the production, not so much the production, more the systems and processes to be able to handle it.
Yeah.
But it was essentially ruining our lives.
And I'm excited to dive into the whole idea of running a pod in the midst of a business, because you guys are juggling so many things between family and all the rest of it. Do you need to adjust that bad boy?
No, I'm all good. Cool. Yeah.
So I think, the coolest thing for me is watching your chemistry on the pod, and now you guys are Australia's number one most listened to business podcast, from what I understand. Is that correct?
I believe that's the case.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll take it.
you guys are up there. You're getting featured by Spotify. Yeah, you're getting billboards, all kinds of crazy things.
We got looked after by Billboard. But it's all just been luck. It's not luck. It's dudes like you, Dane, to be honest. Like, we didn't know it was going to turn into what it did. And it happened really quickly, because some people helped us out with some guests and stuff. And once you start and... no one wants to be first, I suppose. We had some credibility early on the back of some guests that we got from people like you that helped us. And Dane, I remember we came up to Sydney to shoot some shows last year and to do a workshop with yourself. And mate, you've hooked us up as well, right? We didn't know you as well as we do now. And you're like, I can help you. So it was a lot of people behind us, would you say, Pete, that sort of...
Yeah, 100%. Dane, like Mark, our other business partner, like the guests that he rolled through the front door.
Yeah.
Like, I think we had Hamish McLaughlin, fourth episode.
Wow.
Madness.
That's mental.
Yeah, correct. So, no, exactly right, Benny. It always takes a team, to get it out there. You can't do it on your own. And we definitely had that support around the place. So,
man, you guys are killing. I'm just proud of you both. And also, like, I think for those that are listening, like, if you take us back to Bedrock, like, how the hell did you guys even meet? How did you end up running a business together and doing all the things that you're doing now? We'll get back to that. But how did you guys even connect with each other and end up in this space, doing this property development, starting a podcast, running a multitude of companies?
Yeah, it's pretty weird. Like, weird, crazy to think back. And, like anything, I think people, can pinch themselves when they get to a place and they think back and they go, how did that even happen? What sliding doors did you have to walk through for this to happen? But
yeah.
I guess we were shot fitters together.
Yeah.
So we work for our now business partner, Mark, our third business partner. He was his company that we worked at. Benny was an apprentice. I was an apprentice, and we were just doing our things as tradies type thing.
Yeah.
Being a shot fitter, used to work away a lot. So, and Benny worked away a lot. I reckon you worked away more than me, and because the fella you worked with was a bit of a traveller. you know, I felt like you were always
God,
away.
God bless you.
There's some energy behind those words.
Amazing man. But yeah, so, and then you'd go on away trips together and you do big hours. You know, we partied reasonably hard and you know, you got to know each other pretty well.
How long ago was this?
Marcus actually asked me that today as our as we walked around to Coogee this morning, which was nice, Brucey. But I reckon about 20 years.
Yeah.
About 20 years ago.
What was the point where you guys were like, we're going to do something together?
Yeah,
Was it obvious or did it kind of slowly happen?
I think it sort of evolved like Benny, you know, your first business plan. Do you want to
touch on that? You know what? It's weird looking back at how it all went. I did spend a lot of time living in hotels and trying to figure out what I wanted to do in life. I'd been partying and traveling and whatever and I was a little bit lost and I've never really been a big drinker or a gambler. And a lot of the guys that, you know, when you shop fit and they'd be out each night gambling, drinking. But I was staying in and I was writing this business plan. I had this crazy, I was just trying to figure something out.
Yeah.
Pete was in the hotel, was like part of the crew that I was with. And we just had this camaraderie. I don't know, it wasn't like we were friends. It was like we just had this connection that we both wanted to do something different. Would you believe this was, I don't even know how many years, but I was the first business plan that I ever wrote. I took it into Pete and I said, would you read my business plan, man, and let me know what you think?
Yeah.
That's a true story. So
what made you think that Pete's the guy I'm going to go take this to?
Because out of all the other guys, I could tell that he was engaged. We were just engaged in conversation. We were just talking on a deeper level. It's like he knew me different to anyone else. Does that make sense?
Yes, it wasn't just banter and camaraderie. You're like, this guy gets me.
Yeah, because I'm a little, most people that follow the Little Fish Pod will know I'm a little bit quirky.
You and me both.
So Pete could see through that, I guess. You know what I mean? And yeah, so we connected and then just to skip forward, because that's the kind of connection that we had. But then we disappeared and went our own way in life for a number of years and we just ran into each other on site again, on a different site and on a building site, reconnected. And then I was in the process of, with my wife, we were talking about buying a property in Queensland and I was like, I'm going to land bank it and had all these great ideas, you know what I mean? And Pete was into real estate and he was like, well, I'm getting out of here, man. I've met this dude and I'm going to go into real estate.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, cool, man. And he's like, don't land bank, you know, that's no good. You want to flip and you want to do developments. And then we went our separate ways.
Yeah.
Pete goes into real estate. I put an offer in the place that I told Pete about in Queensland. That falls through on the other people's end. Ring Pete up and I go, when Pete was leaving, I said, if you see a property in your new role, let me know. And he goes, no chance, man. I'm like, I'm not going to recommend you a property in my first 2 weeks, right? A week or two later, rings me up and he goes, I've got one.
Wow. Okay, cool.
So he had a property for me and he said, no one wants it. It's got smell all over it, but I reckon it's a good one.
Yeah.
And it's been passed in and have a guess who the agent was. He was.
Yeah.
So I said, look, I'm in if you're in. And yeah, that was the start of it. We did this project together and Pete sold us the project.
Yeah.
as the agent and you can take it from there, PK.
Yeah, 100%. Well, yeah, so got into real estate, wanted to do something different. I'd always loved property. But then, so we did this project together. But being in real estate, you got to see what all these guys were up to, you know, and the property developers. So, you know, before our site came about, you started to join the dots on, okay, you bought that site and now you've designed that, now you're building that, and now we're, you know, my agency's now selling that for you.
Yeah.
So you join the dots on what all these guys were up to and picking the brains of sort of different people around the place, which I was sort of fortunate that, you know, you put yourself out there a bit and people will explain to you what's going on and they will share those sort of inner nuances that you can't see on the surface.
Yeah, because a lot of people think that you can't reach out to these people that are killing it, but usually they're kind of itching to talk to people about what they're crushing it at.
Yeah, 100%. We, our agency that I work for, we were selling for a couple of the reasonably sized developers out there in the West.
Yeah.
And yeah, you just get engaged and exactly what you said, Dane, like when you show a bit of vulnerability and you go, what are you doing here? And people will help. And you need those people, right through your journey. So we're seeing that and then this site that we saw, I reached out to them and said, what would you do with it? And I was sketching and we're doing numbers and we're mucking around. So when we bought it, yeah, we had a back of a beer coaster sort of plan on what we on what we do with it. And then those people helped guide through that journey. It was I still remember where I was. Darren Dean, shout out.
Shout still out, Dazza. Yeah, for sure, man.
Still a great mate today. Still gets me into racehorses when he feels like it. But yeah, he's a superstar. I remember exactly where I was. We'd bought it, we paid a deposit, and a week had gone by, and he said, "Have you organised your land survey?" I said, "What do you mean?
What's a land survey?"
I'm just
100% what happened, dude.
I'm just still
coming to terms with purchasing it.
Yeah, I'm just coming to terms with being a property developer now, Dad. You know what I mean? I'm rocking around.
I don't have the Rolex yet. What is this? What's this thing you're telling me about?
So we've just got full swagger, and then bang, and amazingly, the land surveyor that he referred us to, we still use today, and we're now his biggest client and that sort of stuff. So. But yeah, so having all those people at every turn, and then Ben and I developed this one out. That went well. Started to get some other people involved.
Yeah,
through sort of JV scenarios because we want to do more. This is working, And the JV scenarios for us didn't really play out, but they allowed us to get a bit of momentum, prove some concepts, and then we got some other people involved. We got Mark involved. Mark got some other people involved. So then it just sort of built momentum from there. But there were definitely some early stages where we got a little office, half the size of this room. You're 3 meter by 5-6 meter for anyone playing at home. Like your big office in your shared space, which had the table tennis downstairs.
Rocking up with not much to do.
that's
the next project?
But we're fucking there every day, Dano. Every day. Okay. Like we started at a time, we finished at a time. Yeah.
So I have a few questions then. So when you're talking about, and I'd love to get to the table tennis and hanging out in the office, but before we get there, like for you guys, like so many people are trying to get started in business. And they don't really know where to start. At what point do you think you should engage with someone who's crushing it in your field of interest? Do you think you could go to them immediately? Like, is there a certain stage or an approach that you would take if you were kind of back at square one?
Well, I think, we did that from the start. I was the one sort of more boots on the ground. Benny was still working, still on the tools. I was in real estate. So I was the one that was touching and feeling all the relevant people that we needed.
Yeah.
So we were sort of reaching out, touching and feeling from a very early point. Like we weren't property developers when we were looking, seeking that.
And there was no information. And that's been a big part of our journey, I'm sure we'll get into, is the content and the information. But that's
not really public back then.
There was no information.
Well, you would have found it, Benny.
Yeah, I would have found it. And is it Zelko? One of the
amazing.
So
my big Croatian mate, haven't seen him for a long time. But
he helped us. He was a Croatian dude that Pete met that was a developer, one of those developers out in the West that would underassuming you wouldn't know, and he's just snapping up all the properties and doing all these townhouses and making money hand over fist. But he took a liking to Pete, and because Pete was a real estate agent and sold some of his properties, realized that Pete had bought one, and he helped us, man. He shared some of that information, and then as we started to go, we started to share it, and that's
what attracted you in this space to a townhouse. Like, what are the perks with taking that approach versus buying land or any other way of kind of getting into the same market?
Yeah, great question. I think, for us, that's what we were exposed to at that time.
Yeah.
It was more, I guess, attainable, and, really glad that that's what we did get exposed to. But, knowing what we know now, we get it. We see the value that you're able to create.
Yeah.
We're not doing apartment blocks we try not to dig down and do too deep of basements or anything like that. It was quite line and length. Like even the development we did, it was just two single story side by side, which is even like it's quite modest for the way we develop these days as well. It was really line and length stuff.
Right. But it got you in the space. It got you around the people. You started to figure out the process. When you guys were looking at this, at what point were you like, okay, let's do a business and move into an office space? It seems like a bit of a leap.
Yeah, 100%. And I think credit to Benny, because Benny was always the one that sees things further on. Like he's the visionary. I'm sort of I was in there. I had a development site, and I was the boots on the ground because it was down the road from the office, Western Suburbs. Benny was Northern Suburbs, so you know,
of early, Melbourne, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
Melbourne, yeah.
I was correct. 50 minutes from the
correct. So you wouldn't, you know,
on a
you
good
know,
run.
Based on that, he wouldn't have been out there, you know, too often. But I was sort of driving past it every day and all that sort of stuff. But I was, yeah, I sort of, you know, bang, I'm working in it. Let's do it. Got a job to do.
Yeah.
Where Benny was the one that was putting together, you know, his business plan. You know, that's where it all began. So now it was a little fish business plan. But, yeah, he was the one that sort of thought, oh, we can do more of these and more of these and more of these. And I'm like, okay, let's do more. Like, I'm up for it.
I love how, like, serendipitous this just kind of fell into place. And you discovered the passion through the process.
Yeah.
A lot of times people are saying, like, I've got to find my passion before I do the thing.
Yeah.
Right, do you guys think you were just jamming out, hanging out, having a crack at it, and you're like, this is really fun. Let's take this to another level.
Yeah, somewhat. Yeah. I think, and we've spoken about this, like my passion is property.
Yeah.
So, and I went and got into real estate.
That's so why you're going to, so you were passionate about this already.
Correct. I remember walking the streets, wife and I, we had no kids at the time, walking around Williamstown with our dogs, and I was just looking at the houses, and you know, it was probably 30-odd, and I was over the tools and that sort of stuff. And I was walking around going, I just love real estate. I just want to do this all day.
He gave up. He was making sick money and literally went for like $50,000 a year. And I'm like, what are you doing?
Wait, so you went backwards income?
Man, backwards, fucking
A third, I'd say. Like circa shop fitter.
$150 For 50 grand, man.
Let's go. 100%.
So this is interesting. So you were so passionate about what you were doing that you were willing to sacrifice 100G a year.
Correct. Can I add to that though? That's not the only reason, and this is what makes Pete so good.
Yes.
That wasn't the reason.
Right.
He knew. He just, it didn't matter where he started. He knew.
He knew where it could go.
Correct. He knew, you fucking just give me the gig and I'll do the rest. Do you know what I mean? And the guy that he was talking about, Darren Dean, before that helped us with that site, was the guy that owned the agency that Pete was friends with. So it wasn't, does that make sense?
It totally makes sense. And I think for me, if you can kind of see further down the road, like if you can see past the hurdles, I think so oftentimes when people try to get started in business, they can only see the hurdle in front of them. But you're trying to be a bit more of a visionary and be like, I know I can get way down the road if I just crack through a couple of these obstacles sitting in front of me. Yeah. Are you a natured person where you are very future-centric, very like driven toward an objective? Like what do you think it was that helped you anchor to the future and sacrifice so much in the immediate?
Yeah, I think deep down, and you know, like Benny said, like it was going to work. You know, there was no other options. You
I
know
love what that. I
mean? It was definitely going
to
work.
And to be fair, sorry to cut you off, but it fucking did work. He'd still be doing it now, and he was killing it, man. He was the dude, because he wouldn't say this, but he was out there in his first fucking 12 months. So like he was selling them like hotcakes, meeting all the developers, killing it.
Right.
The thing that he didn't like the selling part and the you know, the car salesman side.
Yeah.
And that coincided with us doing the development and the opportunity to go in. I love property. I hate the selling part. And that's kind of how it went. But I want to go, can I back over something called a sliding doors moment on how important it is to your listeners or people that watch. That moment that Pete followed his heart and decided to leave $150,000 gig to for a $50,000 gig to follow his heart, it didn't go where he had visioned it to go, right? He obviously thought he was going to become the number one agent and all this kind of shit, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It didn't do that. It took him beyond that.
Yeah.
It's brought him here today, right? So I guess the lesson to the people out there is you just don't know. You just got to step, and that's what we try and do with our podcast. You've got to step off the line. You've got to follow your heart.
Yeah.
If you're making decisions around anything other than your heart, pure decisions, it's going to take you 100 miles an hour down the wrong road.
Yeah.
Whereas PK's, we were talking about it a couple of days ago. We identified that as a bit of a superpower, because if that didn't happen,
yeah,
my life probably wouldn't have changed either, right? Because that opportunity wasn't there. And there's plenty of other sliding door moments, but that was a big one that PK did. That was a decision that he made that changed everything, and not in the way that he thought. So for me, and to the people watching and listening, the lesson there is, don't look at the money or the circuit, or you just got to follow your heart and the universe will open it up and it'll feel, you'll find your way.
I agree with that, because I think, you know, you can have 1,000 reasons why not to do something.
Mm.
You just need one reason to do it. And for you, it was like, I want to fucking do it.
Property.
Yeah. And it was just appealing to you. Yeah.
And I was circa 30 years of age and done the tradie thing for a fair while. And it had been good to me and all that sort of stuff. But was like, I've got to figure something out. There's a lot of more hours I need to work on this planet. So I need to, you know, and like I said, I still, you know, those moments in time that you remember that I just go, I just want to be dealing with all these houses. This is what I want to do. So,
and
for the listeners out there that are thinking about it, it's, you know, and my wife Gemma, she said, have you called Darren Dean yet? I'm like, yeah, I'm getting to it. Getting to it.
Getting your back up.
I'm getting to it. So I found his number. He's a real estate agent. His number's everywhere.
Yeah.
Call him and sort of say, yeah, I live in this house, and he lived nearby and that sort of stuff. And he was like, oh, are you the guy with the combi? And I'm like, no, I'm not that guy. And they're like, which one are you? Like, and just had no idea who I was.
Yeah.
And anyway, went to the pub and had a beer with him, and he said, mate, you know, let's go. So he said, you know, giddy up, which I'll always appreciate. And you know what? He was, and which goes to show, and the lesson is, make the phone call, you know.
Take action,
Take action, put your neck out. If it's what you want to do, and like you said, Benny, it's not about knowing the exact road. It's about going, hey, I'm heading in that direction.
Yeah.
And for me, that's what property was.
Yeah.
Hitting in that direction. I went down real estate. But then, and I've said this plenty of times, the 12 months I spent in real estate was the most aggressive learning curve that I've ever been through. And helped catapult us in, you know, into the direction we are.
So if we zoom into that moment where you were in the real estate space, making the 50G, throwing 100 out the window.
Yeah.
What was your most prominent emotions at that time?
It was, I'm going to do this and I'm going to win.
Determination.
Correct.
Was there any fear? Was there any anxiety or anything else there?
Nah, you know what? There wasn't. We didn't have any kids at the time. We had our first child, Annie, whilst I was in real estate.
Right.
So the day what we had Annie on the Friday, I went back. We're at 6 auctions on the Saturday, and I got to the hospital at 3 o'clock in my suit. You know, like, so you know what I mean? And so that's sort of what it was. And Gemma understood that. I understood that. In a suit, it was a nice suit.
It was a shit suit.
Would you say there's a sense of obsession here, or a sense of like what were you craving at that time emotionally?
Well, you know what, it's you know, you started something.
Yeah.
And it was a bit of a move. Like people go, you did what? You're doing what? You know, you got your tool belt on.
Because you got ego as well. You're right.
I had to win. Like this was a risk.
Yeah.
This dumbass has gone, oh, I'm a tradie on 150, life's good, to let's go follow something and let's get into real estate. Because not everyone gets the whole, well, that's your passion, let's go have a crack at it. A lot of people go, oh, I see that as a risk. Like, you've got a mortgage, you're going to have kids one day. Now you're sort of going to throw away a year, you're going to burn 100. But yeah. I guess certain people don't look at it like burn 100.
Well, you were going to burn 100 a year until you figured out how to make that back, right?
Yeah.
Correct. So there was ego play. You know, I had to win. But also I'd started something, someone had given me a chance. And for 12 months, it was all day, every day, what do I need to do?
Yeah.
You were first putting the talent, man. Like, because he would be. Like, he would be the first fucking dude at the agency. He'd be putting the sign out. You know what I mean?
Well, that's the thing. And
that's what I said. Like, when it goes, we've got it on the podcast wall at home, right?
Yeah.
And that's why we're winning now together. Because it's how you do anything is how you do everything.
Yeah.
So it just wasn't an option. Like, does that make sense?
It totally makes sense. Yeah. And if we go fast forward a little bit back to when you guys had your own space with a ping pong table and nothing to do all day.
Yeah.
What was that moment like? And obviously you guys had started to jam together. You started to realize you share the same passion. You have different skill sets. Like, how do you go from, okay, we've started this thing, we've got to fill our calendar up. What was the next step after that?
I reckon I can get us through this, man, because we were both in two different places, right?
Yeah.
Pete was like, we've left the job of playing and he's going, this is good, man, we're doing it. And for me, because there wasn't enough work to do, I was like, man, what am I doing? Like, I was losing my mind. I wanted to do something. I felt like I was playing a business owner. Does that make sense?
And the work that was there to be done was, fair to say, it was channeling to me.
Yeah, it was channeling to Pete, for sure.
Because I was the property developer.
I felt like a fraud, man, to be honest. Do you know what I mean? I felt like, should I be here? I felt displaced. And then because being a shop fitter for so many years,
you're with almost, your hands.
Dude, yeah. No, it's like being in jail, I would imagine. And then you come out and you've got to reacquaint with society, right? So I was so conditioned to being starting at this time and not allowing yourself being so regimented. Does that make sense? So it was definitely a...
Was it a spin out for you when you went from... Because I have friends that were tradespeople or they're working a lot with their hands. They're very physical.
Well, you're sitting down all day.
Now you're sitting down and you're like, man, what do I do?
So that's what it was. But that kind of led us to where we ended up going, right? Because we started... We were looking for more. Would you say, PK?
Yeah, 100%. I think in hindsight, we potentially pulled the trigger too early and went, hey, we're running our business. and we didn't have enough on, but to our credit, which is which I'm sort of super proud of, we just went out and started working on the tools again. So we had the office.
Oh, we did too.
So we had the office that we were running the projects from. Running four projects from. Yeah. But then, and that's the thing, like Benny said, he felt guilty and that didn't happen straight away. Like we were doing business for months and months, I felt like, but then it was sort of the money was drying up because we both had commitments and that sort of thing.
That's true. Yeah.
And then in developing, it takes a long time to get to that, pot of gold as well. So
you were juggling a little bit let's get this thing started. But while we've got time in our calendar, let's go get on the tools, make some cash.
Yeah, which wasn't it wasn't that easy because you sort of went, we're doing this now, and I was packing my tools away because Benny and I, we're both capable on the tools, but it wasn't the future. It was a means to an end for me.
But you know what the lesson is? I forgot about that part of it, man.
Because we were off renovating.
Because of the real estate connection.
Yeah.
Pete had an in for their real estate maintenance.
Property.
So I was sitting there going, where the fuck, we left, we didn't get paid for 3 years after we left our jobs, right?
Yeah.
Apart from a few, we literally were cleaning people's bathrooms.
Doing bathrooms, man. Go, Benny, I got a bathroom, I'll put in a quote. They've said yes.
And we get $400, dude.
We're going to be at this, this address, and we've got the tools and half managing development sites, but doing the work. And I think you went back and did some subbing at some point.
So what happened was I struggled more than Pete. Because like what Pete would say, part of my thing of being able to see the future and being a visionary is I can see the bad shit as well. Do you know what I mean? So I was always stressing, if that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Because Pete was a bit more confident.
Right.
I've sort of lost where I was going
to
go.
Well, that's the thing. I was a guy that went from 150 to 50 and was like, it's going to work.
Yeah.
And I think,
I was a scarred entrepreneur. Yeah. To be honest, so I'm older than Pete, and to talk about how the business came about, I have had that many businesses, man. Like I had I had a landscaping business.
So this was your first endeavor.
I've been desperate. I've been desperate to fucking be a successful business owner for years, man, and had many businesses on the side, from learn how to do SEO, as you know, and build websites, and I've done lawn mowing businesses and landscaping, like you name it, man. I've run nightclubs and everything, and I was desperate, man. I had this one business which I launched about your passion. You've got to find your passion. I DJed for years and partied, ran the nightclubs and whatever. So I started an online DJ course called DJ Master Course.
Yeah.
And it was just super successful, man. It was in 2006. It was, well before its time as a membership website. But what happened was because it was my passion and I didn't know anything, I spent so much, I had to learn how to do the site and then the SEO and then the videos and everything. So it was a really big mountain to climb. And what happened was I got a bit burnt out, and I was about 4 or 5 years in, and I was making good money, but it was almost like it would just replace my wage.
Yeah. Right?
So I could go, I have a business, but it's just replaced my wage, or I keep rocking up to my job and then I get two wages, right?
Yeah.
So I was stuck in this conundrum.
It's one of those businesses where you're essentially self-employed.
Yeah.
Where if you don't show up, money doesn't come in.
Yeah.
And then when you guys joined forces, do you feel like there was a yin and yang there? Do you feel like there was, I so often hear people talk about, they go into a business partnership, it goes sour. And we see this happen with our clients. They come on board, they get a business partner halfway through the project, things go south, now it's just them. What is it that gave you guys an X factor as a team to get through this stress, to get through this season? You were burnt, you'd had a hard run at business. Now you're working on this together.
Oh, yeah.
I think, I don't know, like early on, I'm not sure we appreciated the yin and yang as much as we do now because you've had that sort of, you know, track record and you get to know each other a lot more. But I think early on, and especially even early on in the business, you were struggling to go, where do I fit in? Because I'm not the property developer. I don't want to be the property developer.
Yeah.
You know, your skill sets lie in all the other exciting things we're doing in the business. So there was a little bit of that going on, and that was another moment. I remember where you were, your leg was up on the bench and you were going, I don't fit into this sort of thing. You know, where do I fit in? Where do I get my 60 hours, 70, 80 hours of hustle a week? Because I can't see it.
And I was desperate. I was the one that was desperate to leave my job. Does that make sense? Yeah. It wasn't like Pete was desperate. You know what I mean? Like he hadn't been fighting for all these years to get out of shop fitting. But that was me, you know what I mean? So I was desperately wanting to do it, but wasn't feeling, it didn't feel real, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But I think, and you know, we definitely appreciated the yin and yang because it sort of just happened all the time. Benny would be like, I'm not calling that person. That's what you do, PK.
Yeah.
And then like maybe building out systems and process of what we're doing. Yeah. You'd be like, I'm doing that. Well, I'm not freaking doing that.
Do you think that gave you an edge? Because when we chat to Fred Shibista on the pod here, he was mentioning, and we unpacked this with him, how his background was in tech and like how like things kind of technologically work together. He used to run an agency. So then when he moved into the finance space, he brought in a very different perspective into an industry that usually has a certain point of call. So like if you're looking at real estate, usually everyone that comes into the space is real estate minded. But do you think because, Ben, you had this different way of seeing the industry, do you think that gave you a bit of an X factor?
100%. And it took us almost 2 years to figure that out, right?
What was that?
Yeah, I can tell you. So what happened was we were doing these JVs and stuff, and like Pete said, we needed to wait, and it was like a 2 year turnaround, and that's if they sold and the market was good, and
right, because you get the property, this work, and then you get paid at the end.
Yeah, and then the market started to turn in Melbourne, as markets do, and we're like, I just had this epiphany one night, and
like turn for good or bad?
No, for bad. So what turned for bad? If the market turns, we don't get any money, right? Yeah, so yeah. It was 4 o'clock in the morning. My wife wakes up. I'm in the walk-in robe. She goes, what's wrong? I'm white as a ghost.
Yeah.
I just saw the future and I just thought, I could feel the sentiment. I wasn't the property guy, but I could feel the sentiment that we might not see these things, sell these things. And because I was such a burnt, I'm like more on the negative, right?
Yeah.
I'm always like thinking, what's going to fuck me now? You know what I mean? So I sort of thought, if these don't sell, we're screwed, man. This isn't going to work. We're going to run out of money. And if these don't, so I walk in the next morning into our little pretend office thing, and I walk in, you know, Pete goes, Benny, what's wrong with you? Because I was white as a ghost. Yeah. I hadn't been sleeping, and he goes, what's wrong? And I go, man, I think we're in trouble. And he goes, what do you mean? And I explained. I said, if we don't sell these, what are we going to do? We need money. I think we're going to need to do this for other people and a service. And just earlier that week, we'd had someone reach out to us asking if we could, it was a builder saying, hey, they're difficult clients. Would you guys be interested in managing their site? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So from that meeting and then having that was like, fuck, this is what we've got to do. And I remember Pete was like, when he was right, he was like, yeah, that's a great idea, dude, but we don't know as much as you think we do. We didn't actually know much at all. We hadn't even finished our first development.
Yeah, you but you're already like, we can help other people because you brought in maybe your, what you were doing with the DJ thing.
Correct. So that's what happened. Yeah. So then I was like, then that triggered, I was like, right, this is where I can play SEO. How do we get clients, right?
Yeah.
So I launched a blog on our website and I wrote an article, or I started writing a few articles because that's how I used to get traffic to DJ Mastercourse back in the day originally, right?
Yeah.
So I started to write some articles on, you know, did some keyword research, whatever you do.
Yeah, yeah.
And dude, just randomly when you last thinking it, I was just testing it, we have a lead come in.
Yeah.
One fucking lead, dude, turns up in my inbox. It's a lady. Dad's getting older. They've got this property in. It was like a half commercial, whatever property in McLeod.
Yeah.
And long story short, we end up closing $100,000 fucking deal. Our first ever deal.
We
had one lead.
Yeah.
Came in. It was a perfect match. We sold Pete, and that's one of Pete's strengths. Is, you know, Pete can talk to people and whatever. He was in real estate or whatever. But we did
the gift of the gab, mate.
We did that one deal, and once we realized that, we were off. That was the impetus of, right, man, we just need to get more leads now, right?
Yeah.
So then we started creating the content. We launched Pete's YouTube channel, and that started to drive more leads. And as the leads came in, same as you, Dano, yeah, you know, very, I'm sure it would have been similar. So then we'd start to build out, you know, systems and processes and roles, and, you know, start to figure it out.
Just for the viewers, so like just what unpack what you were selling and waiting for money for, and what was the $100,000 deal?
Yeah,
what was the difference?
So it was a project management service, yeah, right? So all of a sudden we weren't tied to the result. We didn't have
to. Right, you're like, I'll help you manage the property you're launching versus we're managing our own properties.
Yeah, instead of you know, because people are time poor or whatever, for whatever reason, they might not have time to do it themselves or they don't have the expertise.
Yeah.
So we, you know, at the time we're like, yeah, we can do that. So we would project manage. And we essentially became client-side project managers. And what happened is we were able then to get project management fees that were broken up into stages that allowed us to generate cash flow, so that the other side of the business where we were doing developments for ourselves, which were, you know, big pots of gold or paydays, that, you know, we could survive until those days. And then over there we started to build, you know, a development fund, and we just started to prove the concept. But yeah, it wasn't easy, man. And that's the ticket I want to tell people down there. Like, I think, you know, the universe, God, whoever it is for you, mate, you know, if you want it bad enough, you have to earn it. You
know
what I mean?
Interesting, because would you say that had you not been pressed against the wall and had the market not turned bad,
we wouldn't be doing what we're doing.
You wouldn't have innovated and pressed into some new territory. But you were pulling into reaching into your toolbox and go, I kind of know how to do this online SEO stuff. I think we can change the product offering and get a deal in the door to make immediate cash flow.
Made a pitch deck.
So we can bankroll the other thing that we're doing.
Correct.
Yeah.
And then that became the core of our business, because guess what? The fucking market tanked. And we would have lost everything. We would have lost both of our houses. Do you know what I mean? Because we've remortgaged many, many times. You know what I mean? So, but that's what you've got to do in business, Dana. You know, if you want to grow, you know, and that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to invest and grow. And for us, it's been about, you know, and you know, because we sat down and done the workshops.
Yeah.
We genuinely want to take this to the people, man. Because we think we can help a lot of people make a lot of tradies like us that are out there, and they don't realize that, you know, you team up with a mate or whatever, there's opportunity out there to grow your wealth, because you're never going to get ahead if you're just going from paycheck to paycheck. And
I agree.
Yeah.
So you were essentially, white as a ghost, stressing out, feeling a sense of maybe insecurity or imposter syndrome, like, I'm not really contributing. I don't know if I fit this space. You have that moment of clarity. You get a lead, it works. What were you guys experiencing then? Like, what was it? Was it a rush of confidence? It was a sense of possibility? What?
We're practically in the Bahamas, man.
You're like ready to party.
You know, like the funny thing about, I don't know if this is the same, and I've got to stop talking, let Pete talk, but you know, that every year.
Yeah.
This is the year.
Yeah.
We're 7 or 8 years in and no shit. First time we see each other this year.
This is the fucking year. Yeah, man.
Dude, 100%.
And he's like, every year is the year. I'm like, exactly.
Yeah, man. So me and Pete see each other the first time this year. No, Peter. This year. And you're like, yeah, I know, Benny. This year, Benny. You know what I mean? Like, but that's just what it is, you know, like, and it's crazy to look back. Yeah.
Okay. So back to the duality of the business partnership. What do you think it is that gave you guys the edge to stick together through thick and thin? I'm sure there were some hairy moments. What is it that kept you guys pushing through the doubts, the highs, the lows?
Yeah, I think, long story short, and to answer your question really quickly, is we both just want the same thing.
That's so true.
So it's just a common goal. So whether they're arguments or not aligning on certain things, happens all the time, and you know, that can, you know, that can drive a great result as well. You know, conflict can then go, all right, well, how do we fix this and all that sort of stuff. But short answer, common goal. And that's what keeps you heading towards the main goal. You both want the same thing.
Having that awareness that
we don't have to be right.
And also having that emotional maturity to be like, okay, cool, like, well, there's friction here. But then so often, like you said, with the you know, the market's going to turn, that friction created an opportunity. It created clarity. Do you feel like in that partnership, there's been moments of friction that have resulted in a good outcome?
Absolutely.
And it's pushed each other to find things and dig deep where otherwise you wouldn't have.
Well, I think all conflict, as long as it doesn't break, You know what I mean?
Yeah,
as long as it's just bending, yeah. I think it all has to be good.
The further you can bend it without breaking, the greater the lesson, right? And the greater the lesson, the greater the benefit. So for sure, man.
Yeah.
And that just creates constant improvement.
But can I say, me and Pete don't just compliment each other on what we like and, you know, all the obvious things. But, man, personality-wise, we could not be any more different, man. I can pop and I'm off me, you know what I mean? And Pete's the most casual under a shoe. Like, he's just...
Yeah, because your energy is more calm, cool, collected.
He's never raised his voice.
And your energy is like, let's fucking go.
Yeah, and if you piss me off, I'm going to tell you, you're not going to die wondering how I'm feeling, you know what I mean? So, but whereas PK, on the other hand, just moves through, like, so I guess he can... Because we're so opposite, he calms me and he gets any and on the flip side, I feel like I give him energy. Do you know what I mean?
So you kind of help each other out, not with your weaknesses, but with the parts of you that you don't really reveal as much.
I think it's good. Like I said earlier on, Benny saw the future and the vision and that sort of stuff. So like Benny said, I gain energy from Ben's energy because he's
G'd up and you're like, maybe I'll get a little bit more excited about
this. He gets inspired and often can have a negative feel to him at times. You know what I mean? Like a little bit Benny the Compass going. The thing is he goes extreme in each direction.
That
so
is true.
He was probably, you know, too negative at that time where I didn't see the negative as being that crazy negative.
Yeah.
It was still a thing that we needed to address 100%. But he was white as a ghost. And I'm like, oh, man, we'll sort it out. You know, but then he'll go, we're doing this. We're going on the move. We're going on the Hummers, which, you know, no doubt I'm sort of down with that. But I'm probably, you know, I've got a lesser version that I'm probably going for.
Is one of you more like big picture and the other more detail centric? Is there any dichotomy between the two of you there as well? Or it's pretty...
We're pretty aligned, yeah. Infinite game.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think that macro stuff we sort of align pretty well on.
Right.
Yeah, we align pretty well on.
Cool. And diving into the content creation on YouTube and putting yourself out there that, hey, there's an opportunity for you out there to get in. You guys were pretty, you know, heart and hand on the sleeve, like, hey, if you want to do what we're doing, we'll show you how to do it, which is pretty rare in any industry for someone to kind of reveal all their cards and say, we're having fun over here. This is really cool and fun. We want to share it with you, partner with you, make this dream that we love possible for others to tap into as well. But how much of that do you think was because of your personal brand? Putting yourself out there, producing content, making a YouTube channel, creating the podcast. Like, how much do you think your personalities have fed into the greatest success of your companies?
Well, that's Benny, all that.
I would say.
Because that's the journey that he's been on to this point.
Yeah.
He appreciates all that, you know, the DJ master course, the journey that he went on.
Yeah.
He brought all that. I'm the front guy. Yeah. But he brought all that.
Yeah. And I would say both of us, right? Because I wasn't prepared to put myself out there and stand up there and be that person. I just didn't want to do that.
You kind of knew what the plan was.
Well, I did that once before for that DJ master course that I spoke about. And I ended up did a deal with some DJs and they became the face of it because I knew that it wasn't for me. So,
yeah.
But yeah. So I think
Benny brought all that and even at the start, I think I said it on a podcast recently, I was sort of like, so what we charge for, we're going to go and give it out for free.
Yeah.
Sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, sounds like a really good idea. Like, who are you? But I've seen it first, like right, like I'm at the pointy end of the plane. And I'm seeing it firsthand how much of a sort of game changer it is. And I know that aligns with, you know, the way you think about things. But
yeah
so to see that and that's the thing, like Benny, when he gets on these things, you just sort of, you know, you go with it.
Yeah.
But it was probably back to real estate. It was, you know, when Benny, you know, and I appreciate Benny sort of saying PK was one who put himself out, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's just burn the boats. It's 100% burn the boats. Like, it's whatever it takes. There's, you know, it was the same as when I went into real estate, you know, 7 days a week, the whole thing, it was full blinkers on. We can't not get this and I'm not going to be content if 5 years down the track if Benny's, you know, if we had have, you know, you've had to push yourself out there and being that little fish guy, things could have been different. Like, that is not going to happen.
So you feel like the personal branding, the education, it was giving
everything.
It away for free,
it was
how,
everything
how
was,
much of your leads were coming
everything,
from that
everything our whole business that project management side of the business, the impetus of it and the initial revenue.
You were like a lighthouse, like we're here to help you.
100% of it. Yeah, 100% of it. And then eventually we did some Google ads and stuff, which started to, you know, diversify from, you know, we knew which organic sort of phrases. We worked out the builders, building phrase. You know, we started to sort of optimize and figure that out. So we did, so we started to buy some media advertising. So yeah, we started to do both.
And for you, like, because we were talking about this earlier today where you and I were having a chat about if you could go back and do it again, your advice would be to someone else who's starting off in business to try to find a business partner.
Yeah, mine would for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would you suggest someone needs to seek if they're looking to find a partnership? And I love what you guys said about you got to have the same shared vision. You got to have the same goal. And I would agree, same in marriage, same in business. You got to be striving toward the same objective. And I've had friends that have had people that share the same vision, collaborate perfectly in building a business, those that don't. What other advice would you give to someone who's like, man, I'm going to go partner with this person. I'm going to go partner with my friend. Are there some do's and don'ts, some red flags, some things you should stay away from and some things you should aspire to have?
For me, it's pretty simple. You need that common goal. So, but then you need a similar work ethic.
Yeah.
And then you need the complementary skills. No point just going into business with yourself.
Yeah. So when you say complementary skills, like what would you say that might look like?
So essentially, you know, when you're starting out a business, you got to wear all the hats.
Yeah.
You got to do everything. So ideally, what are all the roles in the business and who can you partner with and split them in half? And ideally, the half that Benny does,
it'd be my strength.
Is his strengths and he's talented at and he loves and he enjoys, and vice versa. And that's, you know, fortuitously for us, that's the way it's peeled out. Like,
we didn't plan that.
Look, we've been going on, you know, we're 8, 9, 10 years, you know, sort of doing stuff together. And genuinely, we've, you know, even between Benny and I, we've never even done a sort of roles and responsibilities because we're just, we'll be in a room and, you know, I'll pick up that one, I'll pick up that job, and Benny will pick up that job, and they'll be different and they'll be play to our strengths. And that's just sort of the way it's been. So, so you need that similar work ethic, because I think that I've seen, and we've even spoken to founders on the podcast, that if that's not aligned, if someone's like hey, I'm more of a lifestyle person, and
I'm going to take it easy, knock off early. Yeah, there's going to be tension. Like, I'm working 80 hours. This guy's working 30, you know.
100%. Yeah. So you need somewhat alignment. Yeah. Whether you're going to exactly align, there needs to be, you know, you're heading in that direction together.
Yeah.
You know, your dreams need to be somewhat aligned. But then I think, complementary skill sets. What I mean by complementary skill set is getting different strengths and both strengths you need for the business.
Would you say, like, I guess to some people listening to this, they might hear about the diving in, heading in this direction, tons of problems in front of us would be enough for them to not feel good taking that first step. Would you say that business partner kind of needs to have that gung-ho, like, figure it out as we go kind of energy? Because if you have one person pumping the brakes, the other one trying to accelerate.
You got to both burn the boats, I reckon. What, you know, you can articulate it like, you know, they've got to have a whatever it takes attitude, or they've both got to burn the boats or whatever. You know what I mean? I think that's what it is. And I think me and Pete had that.
Shit's going to go down.
And maybe
and
not.
That's where it needs to be. So there can't be any boats there sitting on the shore.
Yeah, because if you because someone, you fucking use it, man.
Someone will jump in it and they'll be heading out. You go, there's my business partner. Yeah. Took one of the boats that we didn't burn. Yeah. So, genuinely both have to burn the boats, because there will be times where you question what you're doing.
And sometimes Pete will be busy. This? Yeah, Pete will be up and down, or he'll be busy and it'll feel like all the things are going to him and the responsibilities on him, because it might be a stage of the business where the project side of the business is growing. Do you know what I mean?
It's not always equal,
man. And we've never looked at it like that. I know. Yeah.
No, 100%. And you're spot on. You can't remember in situations where I was where I'm like, fucking these projects, Benny, these projects. And then he's sort of the calm one going, all right, PK, we've got to systematically work our way out of this.
Yeah.
We've got to hire the right people, put the systems in place. I'm like, I don't have time for any of that. I've got too many projects on.
Yeah.
You know, and
that's
then,
exactly how it happens.
And then,
sounds like us with content. We've got too much going on. Like, well, let's systemize it. You know what I mean?
But on that, like, how important is transparency and communication between you two? Because you guys have been, like, watching you two talk. You're so transparent with each other. Like, how have you found that as, like, part of your flow?
yeah, communication is huge. And there's definitely been times along the journey that we've gone, because we both work in totally different sides of the business, our strengths are in different parts of the business. So you can be working sort of in isolation, and sort of during those times, different things can creep in and be like, fuck, I'm busy. Wonder if Benny's even busy. And then he's thinking.
You go in the office and he's just kicking his feet up.
Like, yeah, you won't catch me at the office, dude.
So like, are you even working on these projects? Yeah.
So that's the thing. So having that communication piece is just absolutely key, because you're just waxing stuff off each other, you know, and like Benny said, it can come in ebbs and flows. One can be busy, one can be just stable.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with stable. It's nice to be stable for a bit.
Yeah.
And then it switches around.
Right.
It flips 100%. Then the stable one can be a little bit like, well, how are you going with that? And how are you going with that? And is that working? And it even can be just a you know, a view that's a little bit detached.
Yeah.
That Benny's like, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And like, oh, you know, what's the deal with that? And you're like, yeah, what is the deal with this? Oh, we can get someone else to do that. And then vice versa.
It's written on your arm. The obstacle's the way.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's exactly what it is. We were just hitting obstacles and then we go, that's the way. We're gonna have to build a system for that. You know what I mean? And 100%.
I think some of the things I'm hearing from you guys, like, one is creating, you know, a hat wearing mentality. For me, that's a big one, because when I started Rival, I was like, Christ, I'm wearing the bookkeeper hat, the accountant hat, the invoice hat, the email hat, you know, the sales hat, the content creation hat, the market, like, you're wearing all these hats. But the X factor of having a business partner was like, you can cut the hat straight down the middle, boom, you take care of these, I'll take care of those.
For sure.
And there's maybe sometimes where you've swapped hats, or even just having someone else's perspective wearing the same hat.
Correct.
I think marketing should be this.
And we have swapped hats, boom. For sure, man. We have swapped hats where, you know, like Pete said, he'd come a week later and be losing his mind. I'll go, relax, dude. I got this. You know what I mean? I'll do it, dude. You know what I mean?
Let me jump
in. So, yeah, 100%. It's, I would say for me and Pete, though, like, it's our superpower, dude.
Yeah.
Like, I could have built a property development business, but nothing like what we're doing. You know what I mean?
And 100%, I could be managing some sites as well, but I wouldn't be going to the heights.
Pete was going to be successful either way. You know what I mean? And I probably would have been chasing my success too. You know what I mean?
No, 100%. But we both would have done something good, but I feel like, the foundation's much wider together. Yeah. And I think the heights can definitely be a lot higher, and even you look at satisfaction, what we've achieved.
I think for me personally, I love having someone to go, like, this guy is flat out, you know, that doesn't stop today, you know, we're however many years in, and if something good's happening, man, he's blowing the text up, and it's like we're just back and forward, you know what I mean? We're still as passionate as we were then.
Having that
person, because that'll inspire me, and then it'll inspire him, and then we get another, you know, because it is an ebb and flow journey, man. And it's a scary, like, entrepreneurship and business is fucking lonely, man. And it's scary. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So I would say that the biggest thing in business for me is it is a really lonely, lonely, lonely place. So to have a sounding board and a business partner and a friend and someone that you can trust, that you can, you know, that you're going to figure it out. Yeah, I reckon it's definitely a superpower. Have you
heard that quote from Elon Musk? And he says, entrepreneurship feels like you're standing, staring into the abyss and chewing on glass. Sometimes it feels that way, man. Long.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I think sometimes it's good, because even Cam and myself, like, I'll be having a negative day. I'm like, oh, fucking content, there's a lot we got to do. And he's just like, it's cool, man. We'll just do it this way. I'm like, cool. Like, it's so good having that counterbalance. When you're negative, 100%. They're like, think about it this way. And then vice versa, Cam's had a rough day. I'm like, bro, if we just tackle it this way, he's like, okay, cool. I think it's so important to have that, whether that's, you know, your spouse at home or a mate that you can riff with or someone in business. And that seems to help you guys stay even keel.
Correct. And even, not make the lows too low,
you
know, and, you know, look after each other when people, you know, when we're getting too high and that sort of thing. But I think it's sort of, if you are looking for the business partner, one, you got to get them right. But yeah, they can definitely take you further and farther than sort of you ever thought, and they may even just keep you on the horse.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I feel like when you're by yourself, and I know myself, I like to play as part of a team, and I've always played as part of a team.
Yeah.
I'm not by myself. I'm not an individual, you know. So I like to have that responsibility and accountability. Like, I've got people that I can't let down, and that's sort of what keeps you going. So if I was just roaming the earth by myself, no family,
dude.
No business partners, you know, I don't know what I'd be doing. But the fact that I got people that that I need to deliver for, and that and that's what excites me. And like Benny said, sending the texts out when things good happen, you know, you do it for yourself, but I probably more do it for the other people that I'm sending the text to.
Okay.
In all honesty, like when I do a deal and I say, is this deal done?
Yeah.
Because I need to send that text because that's where I'm getting the dopamine hit from. not closing the deal going, ah, close the deal, man. I'm like, close the deal. Yes, sweet, bang. Group text to them. And then I can feel their energy. Yeah. They're going, man, cool, man. That's amazing. I needed that today. Yeah. Grouse, you know, we're doing this, you know, proof of concept, you know, like a whole thing. Everyone just goes, yeah, we're on the right track. Let's doing it. That's what feeds me.
Okay. And then regarding the business, I think, you know, something I've been really contemplating lately is like, I kind of see business break into three stages. And for someone who's trying to get up and off the ground, the first year or two feels like you're working your absolute face off. Every hour of every waking moment of every day, you're staring down the barrel of nonstop problems. That's how it felt for me as a coming in as an entrepreneur. It felt extremely lonely. And I was just like, man, is this tiny reward worth all this work? Then I feel like the second stage of business is like you're working your face off still and you're getting paid all right. You're like, okay, maybe it's even keel. Maybe it's worth this, but I don't know if I can do this forever. Then the third phase to me feels like where Rival is now, it's like we're making crazy money and I'm doing barely anything and the system is just humming. Where would you say, what stage do you guys feel like you're at now? And would you agree that they seem like the entrepreneurial stages in business? And you can disagree with me.
I can't argue with the stages. I think we're probably in the middle of two.
Yeah?
Middle of two, yeah. To be honest.
In the middle of two.
Which one was two again, David?
Two is kind of like we're working our faces off.
Yep.
And if we take our pedal off the gas, it's going to maybe spiral out of control a little bit.
Yep.
And then phase three is like, I could go away for 6 months, come back.
This we're middle of two.
Middle of two. Or I was going to say closer to the top end of two.
Yeah, correct.
I would agree. I'm kind of in a similar place. Now, for people that are getting started in the first phase, it can look terrifying. What's your advice for someone to get through phase one into phase two?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, just resilience, man. You just got to keep showing up and not give up, and that's all it is. I think it's like it really comes down. I know people say this buzzword, your why. You've got to have a real, true reason, man.
To get through that first phase.
When I'm in that where did my wife found me again? In the walking robe, right? 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So when I'm in there at 4 o'clock in the morning, white as a ghost. Confused, scared, or whatever, you know, like that's the time you give up if you're doing it for the wrong reasons.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's when, and the only way
why you, continue in that pain?
Paid for eight. We didn't get paid for 3 years, man. We should have given up. Like by rights, we should have given up multiple times.
So you were suffering through phase one for 3 years.
Yeah, man. Honey, yeah. For 3 years, for sure. Would you say our phase one was a 3 year journey, PK?
Potentially.
Work and like, and we just got, we'll get,
yeah, maybe, you know, four.
And you guys have
maybe, yeah, there you go. He's saying even four.
Okay. You know? So you guys have interviewed a hell of a lot of entrepreneurs and founders as well. Would you say there's a common set of years where someone's stuck there and they're pushing in?
I think it's more than people think.
And I think it can depend. Like you speak to some people who got onto a rocket ship and, you know, gave their product a couple of influencers and now they're doing a million units, you know. Yeah. He's exactly what I was thinking about.
We love you, man.
Yeah.
That's Dylan.
I think sometimes it can, you know, I think it's sort of got to takes as long as it takes, I suppose. As long as it's the right ladder that you're on, that you're climbing, I think you sort of got to do everything you can to stick on it. But as we learned the other day, we were chatting to someone else, you got to pivot as well.
Yeah.
So it's this element of picking when you don't give up and burn the boats, and then it's like, hey, this isn't working. What are we going to do next?
So tricky because Pete's biggest move he made was he pivoted, right?
Yeah.
And that's the thing that we go back to. And the biggest mistake I ever fucking made was I kept flogging the fucking same horse for so long, knowing that it had a ceiling because it was my passion and I loved it, like it was my thing. But I, all in my deepest pit of my heart, knew there was a ceiling. As I scaled the business, the margin shrunk and I couldn't get there, right? But I kept flogging it. Maybe out of fear, didn't want to put it in as a failure, or I didn't know what else I was going to do. So we were the opposites, man, and that's how we collided. So
would you guys say now the phase you're in, getting out of phase two, would you say that phase two is sharing all the hats, making sure we get the right crew,
the team,
wearing the right hats? I'm still leading the charge.
For sure.
That's how phase two felt to me, is I'm leading the charge, but I'm starting to go, you wear this hat, you wear this hat. Cam, content is driving me nuts, man. I need your help on that. Jared, I need someone to run general operations. Brad, I need someone pioneering the accounts. Like, you start handing out the hats. Then I feel like phase three is, all right, let's all work together to create systems for everything.
That's where we're at.
You're trying to implement. I would say phase three feels like we need policies, we need procedures, we need HR, we need principles, we need guidelines. What's your experience being growing development? Because you got to deal with a lot of stuff.
Is there a fear in giving those hats away? Like,
yeah, that's a good point.
There was, but it comes down to the people. And part of that stage two, or I think a really, really meaty part of that stage two, is fucking up the hires, right? So making bad, not bad decisions.
Giving the hat to the wrong person.
Yeah, they're all good people. Yeah, giving the hat to the wrong person or going in the wrong direction because you thought you needed this person to plug that hole, but the reality was it was really a different hole over here.
And phase two is learning all those lessons.
Once you get that, great
person, we gave him the wrong fucking hat.
Yeah, and once you get that,
once you
get through and you start getting locking in the right pieces, and I want to shout out Pete's sister Claire, right? I think she was... Yeah, and she did, yeah, she should be. The day that Claire stepped into our building and it wasn't easy to get her over, and it's Pete's little sister, man, that was a sliding doors moment on, yeah, we got the right person.
Okay.
And she came in and as from the project side, which is such a heavy side of the business, and Pete was the content and the projects. Remember, I'm in the background. So when she came in and helped and supported Pete there, and she's just a savage, man. She came in and those systems and those processes.
And she was pioneering that. For us, it's Emma.
Emma. I've worked with, of course, man. So she's our Emma. Beast. Yeah, correct. Yeah. So she's our Emma and came in and said, I like what you guys are doing and I see what you guys are doing. But she took it and she took it to...
She's going
to
bring some of her DNA.
Yeah, man. And she's changed the culture of our business. She's built her team. You know what I mean?
When she came in, how many people did you have on the crew?
Well, we filtered people, probably best to answer that.
Yeah, I reckon she came in and we had sort of four.
Yeah.
Four or something.
Yeah.
So,
Maybe had two pass through that we'd sort of had.
So you had a little bit of turnover.
Yeah.
A little bit of hire that person because they're going to bring help.
Yeah.
But then learn that, you know, you can get better help and that sort of stuff. You know what I mean? Because when you're doing it by yourself, you're going to come to this office. And
yeah. It's like,
let's go.
Yeah,
no shit. Tomorrow, let's do it.
So how many people on the crew now and in all of your organizations?
14.
Yeah.
14. And then probably a couple of others that are pinch hitty in the say, Little Fish Real Estate or something like that. Well, now 15, Lily Power.
Oh, Charlie. Shout out Lily, yeah. The Powerfish. Yeah. Social media manager.
So I'd say circa 15, sort of 16. But so Claire came on probably 3 years ago and we had, you know, that sort of three or four sort of thing and then helped us, you know, and we've definitely got better, definitely learned. But like you said, handing those hats out, you know, I'm not bad at handing the hats out.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sort of like, you do it, man. This is what you're here for. This is what you're here for. And I'm either going to figure out whether you're up to it or not.
Yeah.
But here's the hat.
Okay.
And if you're not up to it, go do something else.
Right. So you hand the hats out. And now you guys are big on culture.
Massive.
You're big on energy exchange as we are here at Rival. I think that's why we gelled together so well was like, we're pro culture. We love people. You guys love people. You're not looking at this as a numbers racket. You're like, let's get a good crew in here that gel with what we're doing. What would you say have been the pillars that you've injected into your culture, things that you look to give into the team to make sure we're all humming together?
Yeah, I think the lessons that the place where I think Ben will agree where we learned that from was when we were in shop fitting.
Yeah.
Because we worked for the shop fitting company and it was Mark's, our third business partner. It was his company, but the culture was so sick. Everyone wanted a job there. You had to know someone to get a job there, and the things they did, and the hard work that they achieved, and
what were some of the things that were distinctive about the culture there versus maybe the competitors?
It was their ability, camaraderie, their ability to work all hours if everyone was working on the Saturday or Sunday or night time.
Yeah, let that register, man. So you had to know someone to get a job. To work interstate 6 months a year away from you, you know what I mean? Like,
that's
what it was. And by doing that, by the nature of that kind of business, and because shop fitting, you know, we do restaurants, nightclubs, all that kind of stuff,
right?
They would pay massive rents in these shopping centers or whatever. There's open, or maybe there's a new shopping center and they have a launch date.
So do you feel like the team had a sense of like, we earned this fucking job because we knew the guy was
hard work, man. What it was, all it was, is shot fitting is one of the hardest jobs that you can do. Or, you know, it was really difficult. You got to love it because you're away from your family and your friends and you're working day and night because they can't move timelines, right? Because if they've spent, you know, $150,000 on a launch, you know, whether a fridge is coming from Sydney turns up or not, this joint's opening. So when you get into that kind of high performance environment, you build camaraderie,
when someone hears shop fit out, for example, like, again, I don't mean to diminish the value of it, and for anyone who's a shop fitter out there, fucking
work, yeah.
So you would say, okay, let's just say maybe a standard construction site for a house, there's a bit of leniency. If you're a bricklayer, concrete, with a shop fit out, you're saying this is more of a high performance. We've got to hit the fucking target.
Correct.
No matter what, we're staying up all night if we don't get this done today.
When they're not transacting, when there's shops or whatever stop, you can think how tight their margins and stuff are and how much they charge to be in Westfield or whatever it might be. You know, it's not an option.
Do you think that energy that's required for that level of tenacity and precise focus has helped you guys hit this industry different from maybe a standard individual who's looking at the lifestyle maybe too much?
Yeah, I feel like definitely a good breeding ground for work ethic.
Yeah.
You know, culture we learned, camaraderie, looking after each other, you know. But work ethic, like shit.
Yeah.
And then
because it might not be obvious. Sorry to interrupt you, might not be obvious because I think sometimes people look at me and they go, maybe you're an amazing designer. That's where you got. I'm like, we got a good, like a fucking world-class design team. But I feel like the reason Rival went from 0 to 27 in 4 years is because we know how to pitch and we know how to sell. So you would think that the required skill set is creativity, but we actually know that the required skill set of our agency building industry is actually sales, wheeling and dealing, shaking hands and talking to people. What do you think is the secret skill set in your industry that maybe people don't realize?
Would you agree it's the selling, PK? Like, that's where we come back to as well, man. Like, you know what Pete was saying before, sometimes we can get separated in our different, isolated in our separate types of business or parts of the business, and maybe we're not communicating as much. Lost what we're trying to thought. Chop that too.
what do you think is the secret sizzle in what gave your business a leg up in the industry that maybe your competitors don't really know about?
Yeah, well, I think we're in an industry where we are playing in our niche somewhat. You know, like there were definitely client side project managers and that sort of stuff in, you know, the bigger type projects.
Yeah.
And then we definitely slipped into that townhouse space that sort of builders would play in, but then who's looking after the client? So,
but would you say like maybe the educational revenue you're generating, and like you were finding another way to generate revenue to then take that cash flow and park it into building more properties?
Well, the thing is, the educational was more just lead gen, yeah?
Yeah.
Like, we weren't sort of making revenue.
So you were educating to generate leads, which might have been interesting.
Top of funnel, yep, top of
which
funnel.
Which might be maybe something your competitors aren't doing a lot of.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, SEO,
that's 100%. Yeah, so 100%. And even back to the YouTube channel, the giving, you know, getting out there, doing the content, having them connect with somebody.
Right.
That was definitely the difference. And like we said, Benny was the architect, I was out there doing it, and we were on these platforms, and as people would search it, and then it's still the same today. And you know you're the front man of your business, Dane. Yeah. do an amazing job, but you know they come in warm. It's not the rule. It's the, you know, how many people are prepared to put their faces on their business?
It's not the exception.
Not many.
It's not the rule.
So this is the way I look at it with the agency space is there's, you know, we've got Sabri Subi out there. You guys have met him.
Yep.
He's put his face front and center right in front of his agency. But name another agency in Australia that has a face in front of it.
Correct.
So for me, when I'm looking around, I'm like, there's thousands of agencies across Australia. Maybe a handful, I could count on one hand how many of them have face in front of them. Mm. And I think for me, this is where it comes back to, you got to find an edge, for your industry. And for me, it's personal branding.
Personal brand.
Throwing your face out there, going, here's a ton of value. I don't want anything for it. Just know who I am. If you ever need anything, I'm here. I feel like that's been such an edge for so many different industries.
That was the thing I identified. We launched Peter Kelly YouTube channel, so we didn't launch his Little Fish YouTube channel.
Yeah,
that was the first thing we launched.
What was your initial reaction to him? Like, hey man, we got to get out there and you got to speak.
I was a little bit whack, and the thing is, even the way we did it in the early days, we had a camera, and we wrote the words, the script. And blue tacked it to the back there. And I'm like, Benny, you've got me too far away. I can't even read it. He's like, oh, but I need you with the shot. And then we're just mucking around like that sort of thing. And it was a bit whack. But the thing was, you know, when Benny gets on this stuff and he knows what he knows.
He's like, we're doing it, man.
And the thing is, 100%, and it was a burn the boats thing. Like I wasn't who was I going to argue?
I reckon I was a bigger issue, man.
Like I'd rather do it and have it not work. That's what we needed to figure out.
You were okay with failing dismally.
100%, but we need to figure it out.
I used to make decisions based on my fears for Pete, right? So I'd be going, I didn't really ask you to do that because I'd think to myself, I wouldn't fucking do that. So I wouldn't ask Pete. And Pete'd be like, what are you talking about, man? If we can do it, we should be doing it. You know what I mean?
So you were imprinting your thought process into him, but correct. He was like, no, I'm cool with that.
Yeah. Why don't you just tell me? Because I was conflicted because I wouldn't do it. Do you know what I mean? So, I'm asking him to do it, and I could understand back then how outrageous it was to say, hey, stand there, read off this blue tack, and you know that camera we just bought, I did a YouTube video on, and I think I've got it sussed out of fucking.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And whereas... I was like, and then maybe I'll give you a really good example. So in the first video, which was about buildability, I'll never forget, man, I would say to him, because I probably watched the video on it, I need 10x PK. Give me 10x. And 10x meant back in those days.
You were G-ing him up.
Yeah, I would never do that, right? And then what would happen was I would say that to him and then I would lose, see his energy going and whatever, but I wouldn't go back in and go, I need that energy back or whatever, because I'd be thinking, you know, I don't want to push him too hard or I wouldn't do it. Like I had all these insecurities about putting my face out there, which I guess I held things back from pushing Pete further because I was like, I won't even suggest that because I wouldn't do that. Do you
interesting.
Know what I mean?
And that's what we talk about sometimes because there's things you try to get me to do that you wouldn't do.
Yep.
But you're like, no, Dane, this is where you got to kind of have that high EQ. You got to kind of, I reckon he could do it even though I'm insecure, I could get them to do it. Now, when you were pinning the blue tack on the script in front of the camera, a lot of people, I think, feel that maybe content creation has to be done a specific way. And I would disagree. I would say everyone's a little different. I think what works great for me is literally park me in a chair, feed me notes, and then get me to riff and ask me questions. Give me a Red Bull and I'm fucking sweet. What did you figure out was your method of filming? Like what did you test and go, these things didn't work, but this worked for me?
Well, I think all the educational stuff, until we could afford and get a teleprompter, just read off pieces of paper and chopped it up.
But that took longer than you think.
But that's, yeah, and now I appreciate that shit. You know what I mean? Yeah. When you got a nice teleprompter and it's there, it's just,
you know, you know how hard it was going through those cue cards and stuff and how many mistakes we made and how long it would take to edit to go and find the last version of it or whatever.
And then he'd tell me, oh, man, we did 6 educational videos, 3 of them I didn't
have. Yeah, yeah, I remember.
Didn't have the audio.
The audio didn't work. And remember, I had no idea what I was doing. I was just figuring it out. But he was good, man. He would always just go, let's do it. Let's just fucking
You didn't hear what I was saying about it.
Yeah. But that was definitely our superpower. That was Pete being willing to put himself out there and burn the boats.
Yeah.
And me having all the experience. It was like the perfect storm. All of those experiences from all of those businesses, from branding to building websites to driving traffic to all of the different things, the personal branding and understanding digital marketing and all of that. I had all of that. And then Pete was, he was like, just, you know, here I am.
I was just a character, man. What are we doing?
Yeah,
what
do you want me to do? You're a Spielberg and you're Tom Cruise.
Well, I just needed to tell
Pitt,
Brad Pitt, yeah.
I just kind of needed to tell his story online because Pete wasn't a social media person either, but he was passionate about
property. Well, I hear about this all the time because I think like when we were chatting and we chat about this today when I was chatting to, you know, the crew behind Gary Vee and the crew behind Homozy, there is always that puppet master that's kind of leading or producing or kind of eliciting the best out of the talent. And then they're creating a safe environment for the talent to kind of feel comfortable enough to kind of hit their notes the way they need to hit them.
Yeah, 100%. And I definitely feel that with Benny and Bond. And like Benny said, he doesn't push when he thinks, oh, you know, PK's not feeling it. You know what I mean? He's guiding, and, you know, he knows when I'm, you know, like we're doing content all day last night.
Yeah.
And then we're doing another podcast. You know,
you're talking about your snap, almost snapped at me.
Oh, no. Well, he goes to me. I said something.
I didn't even acknowledge it. Let's work through this, Peter.
I said something, and it was in the word I finished with. I should have said, say, steps. And I wanted to say step, but I made it plural. And I stopped. I pulled up, and I was like, got to have another go. Then him from the freaking bleachers goes, it's not steps, it's step. I said, that's why I stopped, dickhead.
That was true, man. And you know what? That's so fucking true.
Yeah.
And I wasn't offended at all, because he's spot on. We had just done a massive fucking day.
Yeah.
And this guy wasn't fucking ready for it. Was done. Life sucked out of him. It's 9:30 at night. We committed to get a podcast out that for the Development Tag podcast which we just launched. Well, you know, so he's like he wasn't happy about it, but he fucking did it, and he switched
over. Oh, we were always doing
and
it.
Then, but go and watch. If you go and watch the episode, that person that I was talking to just before the camera went on, not the same person.
Did you guys ever see the video of the anchorman who is being fed through a teleprompter?
He's getting the shits with whoever's
managing the teleprompter, and he's just like, fuck it, we'll do it live. Like, he just
he
channels a little bit of anger. Like yesterday, Cam was trying to film me, and, you know, my brain, this is how my brain works. If I got notes in front of me like this, and Cam's like feeding me notes, he goes, okay, read this into the camera. I'm like, I'll read the line, I'll look at the camera, my brain goes blank.
Same.
Yeah. Right? So I can't read, rehearse, read, rehearse, read, rehearse. And even when we have a teleprompter, if I'm in the midst of reading out the teleprompter, I'm like, I don't like this paragraph. I'm like live editing the paragraph in front of me. So then that drives me nuts.
Yeah.
So what I figured out works for me is sitting down and actually going through the script a few times and literally reading it verbatim through a teleprompter until I'm like, I got it in my head enough for you to turn that off and hit it and let me just freestyle it.
Mm.
And every time the tonality is better, my energy is better.
Authenticity,
body,
man, 100%.
It's almost like I have to role play what the team want and then do my version of it. And that seems to be where we've found as our sweet spot. And if they feel like they're missing something, Cam will be behind the camera and he'll be like, we're missing something. He'll just ask me a question and I'll answer the question and then we'll post edit that in.
Yeah.
For you, the reason I'm sharing this is I think so many people think they have to nail it.
Mm.
And even still after 4 fucking years of filming, I still sometimes have to get back into the groove. And I didn't eat lunch yesterday. I was tired. I was cranky. I had a lot of shit going on. And it's just like, you got to sit there and just fucking push. Like you got to, sometimes
it's
you
like gotta, a muscle.
Yeah. You got to pull a little bit of anger out and be like, fuck it. We'll go live. Let's just do it again. And I think, you know, whoever's buying their camera has to have the gusto to kind of take a bit of heat and then just push it back and still produce and direct. And have you found that groove for yourselves? Do you still struggle to get on camera sometimes? I'm just trying to showcase that it's pretty normal. Like, it's not abnormal to have this experience.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like, we're always a work in progress. There was a lot of teleprompter stuff going on. The dev tank, which is going really good, that's more of a freestyle play. We talk about topics. Benny sits in the corner in the cheap seats and you know, produces. But to Benny's credit, he suggests things, but then he's really complimentary as well, which I'm not sure how you roll, Dane.
If I nail it, he gives me a high five, he gives me a thumbs up. He's like, fucking, that was sick.
Correct. And I think
validation that you did
it. Yeah, correct. Because that's the thing. These guys are the ones that their heads are in YouTube all day, every day. They're, you know, they're content creators, man. Like, I'm not. I'm a property developer.
Yeah.
You know, I know when I'm winning at property development, but when it's comes to the content side, I'm just looking for their validation.
Yeah.
So when they...
Because you're like, I'm overthinking it. I don't know if I got it. And if
did we
like,
get it, boys? Yeah. And I'm just looking and going back to, I'm just looking to deliver for them.
Yeah.
So if I'm giving them what they need, then they can get the goods and go off and post something great. That's what I need to give to them. So that's, again, I guess not wanting to let them down. That's the accountability piece. I'm like, I'm here for the team and to deliver for the team. And once I get the thumbs up, I'm like, cool, winning. You know what I mean? And I'm going to stay in front of that camera till we get it. That's why I'm sort of saying, was that good, boys? Are we happy with that? Will that work? Will that work?
Yeah.
But then, to have those guys give me the feedback, this is what we want to do. And I go, cool. But then instantly, as soon as were nailing it, they're like, you killed it. You killed it, which then that gives you the drug to like go, cool, we're doing it.
You get the dopamine hit, you get the serotonin, you get the fist bump, the camaraderie, and then you go again.
Correct. I've got a good example where we launched the development tank, we tried to launch it all of last year, but we couldn't. So we like, you know what? Let's just lock in the time. We're good enough to rock up here. You just know what you want to talk about. Me and Bon will figure out the rest and let's just do it. And that's what we did. And we hit fucking start, right? Yeah. I had no idea where he was going. That was his job, right? We were too busy to even figure it out. And we hit start and there's Pete, education style. And I've gone, stop, right? And I've gone, stop. And I've gone, no, 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 no. And I've gone, now this one's the one where you get to just be Pete, man, and you just get to fucking talk. And I swear to God, and anyone that's been following our content for a long time, go back to the first Buildability video or the first Little Fish podcast, go to the first or any of the Development Tank podcasts and you'll go and see Pete at his best, because that's when he's not trying to, you know, when you're on the Little Fish podcast, we're talking about business and entrepreneur, but this is where Pete's just talking about business and he's just in fifth gear, fourth gear, just cruising, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think, to answer your question, what we originally thought we should have done the Development Tank podcast first, but I think it's a masterstroke now, because if we had done that back then, he wouldn't have had all the experience that he's got now. And the way that, and I said to Pete, and this wasn't that long ago, and I said, out of all the content that we have fucking done, dude, that piece that you just did then, that 2 minutes of introducing the podcast is the best fucking piece that we've ever done. And it wasn't about hitting the points and stuff. It was just, he just slipped into being Pete and just talking about having been confident, having all the experience of being on camera and delivering to the teleprompter and to the scripts and all of that. So, yeah, I think...
Well, I think you guys were editing it and my sister come past. She's like, oh, what's that? What are you guys doing here? And she watched it for a bit and she said, that's the first time I've seen Peter Kelly doing content.
That's what my fiance said recently, because here's a weird thing. And you know, we were chatting to, like, very lucky to chat to a very famous comedian recently about their career and what they're doing with Netflix and so on. And they were saying to me, being a stand-up comic, every time you go on a stage, it's like taking a brick out of the wall and learning more about yourself. And the objective as a comedian is you can't go straight from naught to a Netflix special. You got to hit stages. You got to bomb. You got to figure out what the fuck you are as a comedian before you can even get a lick of a chance of doing anything like that. So when I heard that, I started to look at what we're doing here with the pod, and I realized that the reason I'm starting to perform a lot better on other people's podcasts is because we've recently decided that we're going to produce our own podcasts. And for you guys, like, what do you think have been the benefits of pursuing a podcast for 2 years and getting into the granular details? Because I guarantee you probably didn't know how hard it was in the beginning, as we did. It's a fucking tsunami of problems. I'm like, how hard is it? A couple of couches, a couple of mics.
Did you have audio problems? I reckon audio was one of our biggest problems.
Huge problem.
Yeah, so fucking...
Cameras.
Yeah. But to point a question at that, I'm just trying to give some context here. Like, what have you taken from running a pod and gone, holy shit, if we not have done that for 2 years, we wouldn't be doing X?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, Benny's the sound, you know, employs a videographer, all that sort of stuff. So full producer.
Yeah.
But I think I guess personally, before Benny gets into that, yeah, the growth that you see, and it's like they all say, you know, when you do hard shit, you grow.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's your Goggin shit, you know?
Stay hard, motherfucker. Yeah, yeah.
it is, man. And
taking souls.
I used to do one, we used to do one pod, and, you know, I sort of did the intros and the outros, and, you know, I definitely, you know, feel the weight of the pod, you know, the structure and the where are we going with it sort of stuff, I think more than the other boys. And it just drained me.
Yeah.
I was so drained. One pod, man. Yeah. One pod. Now we're doing 5-6 a day. Like when we go, you know, just when we batch
it. Dude, he is so good, man. You've seen him, dude, man.
You guys are on fire,
he
man.
Is, well, not he is, man, as far as like hosting and all of that. I really feel like in the last six months, we're really benefiting from the 10,000 hours of shooting shitty content and using blue tack cue cards and all of that shit, you know what I mean? Because we shot a podcast earlier today and me and Marcus in the middle of the podcast. You sort of sorted out the corner of your eye.
What are these guys laughing at?
Yeah, I was looking at Marcus. Like, we'll just, like, we knew what we were talking about because he just the way he was driving the podcast and the question that he asked were just like, he doesn't even fucking eat up. We're just going, what are we doing here, man? But he has. He's really just, he doesn't realize it and he just got better from just turning up and doing it. Does that make sense?
Because what you were saying about your sister walking past and going, that's the first time.
Authenticity.
That's the first time I've seen your authenticity. My fiance Ellie, shout out to Ellie, was watching a podcast I went on recently and she's like, that's the first time I've seen you on a podcast. And I was like, shit, because she watches all of them and I've done plenty. And she's like, no, you were just full unapologetically being yourself and you didn't give a fuck what anyone thought. And I was like, this for me has been my comedy stage taking a brick out of the wall every time. Yeah. And I think, it's almost like you're doing media training. If you have to run your own dojo, you're going to get pretty fucking good at throwing punches eventually. And I think that's what this has felt like for me. It's our dojo. You've got your dojo. And then when you go on the circuit, you're like, man, I'm pretty good at this. And because you know how to do the martial arts. You understand.
You've got the tools to draw on. Yeah. And I think that goes, like you said before, the most important skill in your business is the selling part.
Yes.
And I go back to, which I really poorly tried to explain at that point, that I think if we really peel everything back as well, that's the most important thing for us. And we've been moved away from that and been caught on focusing on other things.
Yeah.
But we've always, that's been the root of where we've always, if we go back to that, then we know that we're going to be all right. So, I don't know. Am I making that?
Power to you. You're killing it. You're crushing it. You're doing so much for your community. Yeah. You're peeling back the veil for those that want to get into your space and start making a couple bucks for themselves in development. And you guys have scaled this thing to be monumentous. So I got a lot of love for people that can crush it in business and teach it and have a heart to help people and do what they love. Because I meet a lot of people that do business because they're doing it for the money or they're doing it for this or that reason. You guys genuinely love it. You genuinely want to help other people and you want to showcase what you're doing as you're doing it, which is, for those listening, it's not fucking easy to run a company and showcase what you're doing and educate and entertain. It's a lot of different facets. And just, I just want to nod to you guys. I just love what you're doing. I think you're absolutely killing it.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. I really, really appreciate it. And that's the thing. If it was for the money, we probably would have turned into that more, product, profit-driven model earlier. Yeah. You know what I mean?
But why even entertain people and
showcase? Why even entertain people? Why do multiple podcasts? Why do education? Why build a Little Fish Network? Why build a masterclass? Why do all that when we can just do our thing, drive the profit, money in the bank?
Yeah.
But the foundation that we've built, all the products that are now on the shelf,
they've
taken a lot of time, a lot of investment, a lot of hard work, and now ready to go type thing. And so, it's been a big play, and I would have never foreseen that.
Love it.
Yeah.
And I feel like, Dane, you've played, Pete said it earlier today, like you don't realize, but, from when we met you, that felt like someone putting a hand down and lifting us up into the big leagues. Do you know what I mean? Like,
wow, thanks, man.
We're trying to, you hooked us up with some amazing guests, some of the best guests we've had on our podcast. You didn't even know us, but not even that stuff. You know what I mean? More the branding and that experience. You really pushed us, man. You challenged us. There was, for the people playing along at home, there was
crazy experiences. There was fucking
tears. There was tears. There was
yelling.
There was yelling. There was emotion. Bumping. There was confusion. There was disagreements. There was like, that's not even what happened. Do you know what I mean? And through that experience, we came out with crystal clarity of who we are, why we're doing what we're doing, where we're going, and who we need to sort of take us. And it just became clear. And we didn't know that. I said at the start, it was a massive decision for us, right?
Yeah.
Because all we'd ever done is reinvested into the business, man. We'd never taken any money or anything. And then there was a big investment to do this thing and we're like, but that was our profit. You know what I mean? We were going to take profit,
And then, Benny comes to me and we're doing P&Ls and budgets and that. He's like, I'm saying, you want to do what?
He's like, I want to do branding.
It sounds like, what do you mean?
But their logo's the Cooter. Everyone tells me that's the Cooter.
Everyone says they love the Little Fish and we're going to go redo it all. But amazing, amazing move, masterstroke, and is setting us up
if you want to play with the big boys, and this is what got us over the line, I remember Pete saying, if you want to play with the big boys, you've got to do what the big boys do. And we said, fuck it, let's do it.
Love that, man. And I think like if anyone's listening to this and is fascinated with getting into, you know, the property development space or looking to reach out to you guys, what's the best way people can find you and reach out?
Probably littlefishnetwork.com.au.
Mate,
or just see, you know what, if you just put Littlefish anywhere, we do sort of pop up in most places.
You guys are out there.
Yeah, we're out there just on the socials. But I would say, no, actually, I've got the answer. Peach YouTube channel. That's where all the gold is, right? That's where we've been feeding that channel since day one. And we put a lot of time, love, and you've heard the funny stories of how we've got these videos up.
But we'll put the links amazing. In the descriptor below and everything. But guys, from the bottom of my heart, you guys are friends. You're always welcome here. Thank you so much for just being so much fun to hang out with. Thanks for hanging out as friends. We're going out after this. And yeah, guys, got a lot of love for what you're doing, a lot of love for how you operate and how you look at business. And yeah, we're just excited, happy to have had you here. Thank you so much.
Thanks, boys.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing boys. Dane, really appreciate it. And yeah, amazingly kind words and yeah, the feelings mutual, mate. We come up to Sydney, you open the doors, you open your home here, you know, and everything's been nothing but warmth, and you know, you've delivered for us, and can't wait to see the reach and of the brand and that sort of stuff where it gets to, which is credit to you.
We'll have you guys back when you're in phase three.
Yeah, let's go.
Where's phase four?
Phase four is just like...
You're just taking the piss.
You're doing nothing. You're making all the coin.
Yeah. you're tripping over.
You're in the Bahamas. Going,
where'd that bag of money come from?
Yeah, you're just living it up.
But Dan, can I just say, man, you've been in since the day I found your Instagram, man, you've been a guiding light and an inspiration. And like I said, and you've been a hand that's pulled us up, man, which we're into the big league and we really appreciate it, man.
Thanks, man. Big love.
Massive. Superstar, man. Keep it up, Dano.
Hey.